ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, Meredith here. Just a minor language warning for this episode of Soul Search. Nothing big, just thought you should know. Hello, Meredith Lake here. Great to be with you for Soul Search, the show curious about contemporary spirituality, how we make and discover meaning. I'm on Wadawurrung country on Victoria's Bellarine Peninsula. This is an edge place where people come to explore their spirituality, to find connection and maybe sanctuary.
Sometimes we think of an edge or edginess as being harsh or a bit cold or a bit tough. But when you drive through the Narrows to get here and all of a sudden opening up is Swan Bay, one of the major ecosystems, not just here but internationally for seagrasses, marine life, etc. All of a sudden you start to see yourself on an edge which actually connects, is a sanctuary.
I've come here for a festival called Sacred Edge. And in a moment, you're going to hear more from the organiser, Greg. But I'm not here on my own. I'm here with Soul Search producer, Rowan Salmond. Hello, Rowan.
Hi, Meredith.
What are your initial impressions?
It's been a really great day. It's my first visit to the festival, which has actually been running for about 10 years now. And there's lots and lots of different people who come, First Nations folks, LGBTQIA plus people, disability advocates, and they're all asking the big questions in life and searching for meaning inside and outside traditional religion.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of the festival is happening in and around a church.
Mm.
And yet so much of the exploration that's going on here is really at the edge or even beyond the edge of what you might call traditional religion. It seems to me like, I don't know if this is putting it too strongly, but there's a kind of recentering of spiritual community at the edge of formal religion here.
Yeah. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people today who don't usually feel very comfortable in traditional churches. A lot of people I've met here experience some form of marginalization by society or other institutions, but they're really in search of the sacred and like a connection.
Hmm. Well, as you've said, you and I have spent a really full day here, Rowan, talking to just like a handful really of what must be a couple of hundred people who've come along. And I'm really keen to hear from some of the folks that you've spoken to, Rowan. But first, I want to introduce the organiser of all this, Greg Crow, the man behind this year's Sacred Edge Festival. But also, interestingly, he's the minister of Queenscliff and Point Lonsdale Uniting Church, which is hosting the event.
I guess technically I'm the minister. I have a formal role in community, but I'm a differently experiencing, interpreting, imagining person. A traditional church congregation, a traditional context wouldn't suit me at all. It wouldn't be good for me and it wouldn't be good for the people. So while at one level Queenscliff and Point Lonsdale is my parish, it's not a traditional context at all. The congregation is a community now of quite diverse groups. So I refer to us as communities rather than community. I live across the road from the beach. I live in a really quiet, beautiful town, and I'm a very fortunate person to be in this space.
Is this an edge place for you?
In a variety of ways. When you drive through the Narrows to get here, all of a sudden you start to see yourself on an edge which actually is a sanctuary which connects human life with country, with ecosystem. And so there's this interrelationship that I think is present, which makes it an edgy place. But you can become a bit self-satisfied here and quite comfortable here and miss what the invitation is of this space to us.
What is the invitation you're hoping to extend?
When I was present to it last year, the thing that stood out for me was that there were people who were coming not just for the first time but had been coming for years. And for many people, this is the only space that they come to explore what we might call the sacred. And I was overwhelmed by a sense of belonging to a participating in a community that gathered. And to me, this weekend is actually the gathering of a community, either people that have come to it for the first time or people that come many times. And there's the sense of being, for all intents and purposes, not in the traditional sense of the word, but a gathered community. So that was the thing that I wanted to explore. So this year, the concept was stories. It's listening to our stories and other stories that invite us into our human experience. And so I wanted to push that a little bit. And then this idea that when people gather together, two or more, as you are, simply as we are, our humanity is enhanced. So I really wanted to create a space and a weekend for people where they listened to stories and maybe took a deeper dive into themselves and went away saying, my humanity has been enhanced.
There are so many structures, forces perhaps, that diminish our humanity, and depending on what our lived experience is and what communities we're part of, sometimes that can be really severe, that diminishment that's placed upon a person. So how have you kind of curated a program for that? Like, it's a really diverse program.
I think each of the different areas that we focus on, First Nations, LGBTIQ, the immigration refugee story, environment, and this year disabilities. When I hear a story, I'm not thinking to myself at least, the poor Indigenous story, the poor story of the disabled person, et cetera, et cetera. What can I do to help? I have to sit there and ask, who am I that is listening to this story? So it's really about knowing myself, not projecting onto the other person's story, but knowing myself as I sit and listen to that story. When I can do that, when I can be that, then I think I can be authentically present to that other person's story, and that other person's story then actually starts to invite me then into those that depth of what it means to be human. You know, last night Lorna spoke quite confrontingly about social behaviours and attitudes toward disabilities. And the title of her story was Holy Shit, Discovering Wonderfulness. And there was a sense in which you actually don't discover the wonderfulness until you actually start with the holy shit. But it's not about avoiding the shit. It's actually about embracing it and diving into it. And that's about being real with our human experience. So I think all of those intersections have a holy shitness about them. And that's the invitation to take a deep dive into that, but also who am I that is taking that deep dive, and how do I experience myself in that?
Well, Greg, thank you for this festival and for having me here this weekend.
Thank you for you and Rowan being here, and we would love to have you back too, for sure.
Greg Crowe, the organiser of this year's Sacred Edge Festival. He's also the minister of the Uniting Church in Queenscliff and Point Lonsdale, which is on the Bellarine Peninsula in southern Victoria.
I'm Lorna Hallahan, and I'm an associate professor in social work education.
What is it that brings you to Sacred Edge?
I've been involved in the disability rights movement in Australia for close to 50 years. And so in many ways it took me into my academic career, but it carries me wherever I go. And I'm always very interested in people who are wanting to face up to the really present difficulties in the lives of disabled people, the persistent patterns of segregation and the social exclusion, and the diminution of people's hopes and rights. And so whenever I'm invited into a conversation that allows me to talk about that, I'll turn up.
Segregation is a really strong word. How did you come to see that as the right term or the necessary term for what you need to describe.
It's actually in the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Disabled Persons. It's a history that's been claimed by the disability movement from, well, really since the early 1800s. If we look at it historically, the great gathering up of people who were labelled the impotent poor, and the locating of them in asylums, and then our service system giving birth to new forms of all of this. We still have separated, segregated education in Australia. We still have a lot of places where people only spend their days with other disabled people, with paid staff servicing their bodies, cut out from employment, from community participation, getting a full message constantly that they're not worthy to live among us. And so I think that Australia has not yet really dealt with a profound ambivalence about the place of disabled people. Are you with us or do we push you away? And we've got both of those forces active in our society.
Where do you see the place of that conversation within ostensibly a festival exploring spirituality?
Yeah. I think that all of us, no matter where we find ourselves in this great mosaic, need to be able to see ourselves in solidarity with others. And we can see that as an entirely political thing, or we can actually see it as a much more profound part of an embrace of a human condition, which is inherently deeply fragile, easily swept away, prone to a whole lot of attacks from a whole lot of different ways. And so once we move into that kind of understanding about what it means to be human in the world, we tap into a much more profound spirit of connection. Wherever I can find people who are prepared to have that conversation, I know that I'm in solidarity with them. And I think that when I think about it theologically as well as spiritually, I think that's what we're called to.
How did you come to register it as a question of our fundamental human reality? Because it often is, I think you're right, that it often is treated as a political question perhaps.
That actually came to me before the political thing. I think that when I became very ill when I was 16 and found myself thrust into the worlds of people who were dying, I had to look around for the resources that were available to me, and one of them was the church childhood and my ongoing fascination with theological thought. And then once again discovering these submerged histories of people who were talking about this stuff in very different ways. And so I think that the very first part of it for me was that theological tradition helped me hang on to finding some meaning. And it's really important to be clear about this. It's not meaning as in God did this to you so that you could be a witness in the world or some shit like that. It really is about what am I learning here about life, about what is important, about the nature of love, about the nature of hope. All of those big ideas that we gather under a theological umbrella can become so enriching. And then once I discovered that, it brought me into relationship with other people who said, we act in the manifest world, not just in the world of prayer or wishful thinking. And so the theology brought me into the politics.
For some people, that theological tradition might be a bit invisible. I think we live in a society now that has mixed theological literacy, shall we say. I certainly come across that a lot. I'm sure you do too. So how would you kind of introduce that tradition that you're referring to?
Yeah, I think for me, I grew up in Anglicanism, and Anglicanism's got many different things in it. But one of the things that's really powerful is the whole notion of incarnation. And so the question about incarnation is, what is it that God embraces in the incarnation? And it's this human frailty and struggle. And I'm not thinking about sinfulness at all, but just trying to get through. And so then the conversation that I would always have is to say that we don't have to do anything other than incarnate God's love in the world, and that doesn't mean that you and I have to have an agreed faith position, belief position, but we can certainly have a shared political and civic tradition, which is to believe that that God's love is something that says, you know, deep, intrinsic, unmovable human value and dignity. It doesn't matter where you are or who you are. You don't have to earn that. That is part of what it is for you to be human, and that is what we are going to hold and uplift and secure for people.
It's been said that justice is love in public. Yeah. So spell out for me how this then plays out in, well, the kind of politics that you were talking about.
I'd go a little bit further. I'm really interested in the work of a Jewish philosopher called Avishai Margalit, and he wrote a book called The Decent Society, and he said that justice is about what a government or a society does to give to people what they need. He then said that a civil society is where individuals treat each other with respect, and we do that in the streets and homes of our lives. But the interesting thing he talked about was a decent society, and he talked about it in the negative. He said an indecent society is one which uses its institutions to humiliate its citizens. And so for me, that brings in this whole question of dignity, which I can't separate from any rights conversation. And most of my work has been trying to work on how the human service world, the health services world, the welfare system can desist from a deeply ingrained pattern of humiliating those people who need to establish entitlement by supplication.
Lorna, you said that academically you've spent a lot of your career in the social work space, but I know that you did formally study theology at a high level as well. So why did you do that? I mean, it takes years of a life to really attend in that way to a discipline and to what it offers. And it's not an obvious fit, I think, for a lot of people with social work and the things that you're talking about. So can you just make that a bit visible? At what point did you decide to do that? And why was dignity something you wanted to explore with a theological vocabulary?
Well, maybe partly because I'd experienced some of that loss of dignity myself. But I think there were a number of things happening in me. Part of it was, I'm going to kill off this God thing forever, so I'm just going to do the PhD, and then I'll know that there's nothing in it and I will have settled this business. But the more that I got into it, the more it drew me back in. And that was because I was able to enter into conversation with people that we might call organic theologians or organic intellectuals, you know, in the Gramscian notion of the people who are living out here and thinking through this stuff, and talking with people with disability about what this meant in their lives, and the level of sort of deep thought, and also some of the existential elements that people brought to the conversation, and all of that just completely entranced me and made me realise that you could crack open the patriarchal, all-powerful notion of God into something quite different. And so what was really gone at the end of it was any notion of an all-powerful God. But what was left, and so was this sense of a God indwelling in the human condition, no matter where, that there was no sense of God abandonment in the places even where we look and think, gee, that's an abandoned place. That's actually where you find phenomenal love and hope and possibility, as well as terrible suffering and despair.
I've only been at Sacred Edge Festival for a short time, Lorna, but one of the impressions that I'm forming is that if people are still prepared to use the language of God or seek some kind of presence of God, it's in the midst of whatever life is before them now, that what you might term incarnational expectation is, it's kind of palpable to me at this festival among some people, not everyone. There are people here who are deeply ambivalent about God and perhaps have taken their leave of that as well, which I respect. But what's it like for you to be in this space having these conversations with people, given that you do speak to these things very widely?
Carter Hayward was one of the first women to be ordained in the Episcopal Church in the United States, and she said that what we do is godding. She turned God from a noun into a verb, and I've always thought this was a really very, very helpful idea. And so in all the conversations, including the one we're having now, I consider that we're godding. We're actually touching in on really ultimate questions that have taunted and tantalised people for generations. And so we're not alone in this sort of conversation. And so I don't have any strong sort of, I've got to get God into every conversation, because I just think that the conversations about the really important things are conversations of Godding. Yeah.
Just finally, again, at a time when I think a theological vocabulary is a little bit rare, what do you think it could potentially add to the way we as a society ask the question of ourselves about being human and perhaps aspiring to be more decent collectively, as you've said?
Look, I think it's really tricky, and I admire you for doing this program, because I think it actually does provide a forum to have something, to have this sort of conversation. I find myself often in environments where there's an enormous amount of hostility, particularly to Christians. There's a sort of condescending acceptance of people who've got something that might be considered a bit exotic, but a really deep hostility. And so for me, it's just a matter of trying to live the dignity, the respect, the composure, some of the things that I think are about that. And it's not about not swearing, not having a sex life and all of those other things. And so quite often I find myself in situations where people go, "You're a Christian?" and then I'm happy to talk about it with people. But it's not something that I would safely bring up, except in the sense of the philosophical dimensions of dignity. And so I've been talking a lot about dignity in recent years and about that sense of profound value of people.
Lorna, thank you. I've really enjoyed meeting you this weekend, and thank you so much for talking to me.
Yeah, and you too. Yeah, thank you.
Disability advocate Lorna Hallahan, who I met at the Sacred Edge Festival. Lorna has a PhD in theology, and she's an associate professor in social work at Flinders University in Adelaide. On ABC Radio National and by podcast, you're listening to Soul Search, and today to stories from Sacred Edge, which is an annual arts and diversity festival hosted by Queenscliff Uniting in Victoria. I'm Meredith Lake, and I'm here at Sacred Edge with producer Rowan Salmond. Like me, he's been meeting people curious about the sacred, about community, and what it might mean to move from an experience of marginalisation to something more like true belonging.
Hi, I'm Brianne Manley, and I'm here at Sacred Edge Festival. And this year is my 20-year diagnosis anniversary with multiple sclerosis.
I see. And you're doing some painting.
I am doing some ink drawings. I'm bringing out an album for my 20-year diagnosis anniversary, but it's based on the 8 stages of grief, and I think there's only 7, but I've added an extra one in hope. So I think that's the one thing that everyone's missing. And I've written a song for each stage, and I've painted a picture with each stage.
Can you tell me a little bit, maybe a potted version of your story? You spoke earlier today, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, well, long story short, I went into the doctor because I couldn't see out of one eye. And then 9 months later, a doctor at the hospital to say, oh, we think you've got MS. And I went, what is that? And I just remember doing the MS readathons when I was a kid. And,
yeah, I remember that too.
And so I kind of get it. Just upstairs doesn't work with downstairs very well. They don't communicate very well. They're not on speaking terms all the time. So that's how I explain it to other people.
Let's take a step back.
Yeah.
What is your connection to this area and the Queenscliff area?
Right. I've grown up on the Bellarine Peninsula, so I was from Clifton Springs originally. But then my now husband, brought me over here to Point Lonsdale and in Queenscliff area about 16 years ago, and I have never left.
And what brings you to Sacred Edge?
Greg asked me because he knows I've got a studio that I do art in on Kirk Road, and he comes in often and says g'day, and he just thought about asking me to join in and have a voice. It's for people that don't have a voice. So yeah, I was really like chuffed.
Yeah.
Chuffed he asked me, because I try and tell my story as much as I can because I want to influence others to live their best life and to that it's not the end. I've got a thing where I want to experience as much in the short life that I have and try and be a good influence on other people and say that you can, you know, just live the best life you can. Like, don't be scared of doing new things. My quote is that if you're scared to do something, you do it anyway, because chances are it's not as scary as what you would have thought, and then you'd feel really good for doing it afterwards. And then you can, like me, have a new experience, notch on your belt.
Yeah. Oh, a message for everyone, I suppose, yeah, yeah. There are a few people who have disabilities who've spoken at this event. I wonder, what have been your impressions of today and yesterday?
Yeah, well, I do love it, and I love how they've got a voice.
Mm.
And usually people with disabilities are on the bottom of the list. And it's really inspiring, and I would like to be able to almost give someone a voice just through my music. And so they've got something to connect to now. They're not alone. They're not the only ones who feel that way.
Thank you for speaking with me tonight.
Oh, thank you too.
That was Breanne Manley. She's an amazing person. She's an artist, a musician, and a motivational speaker. And, you know, she's also written a book called Hope, which tells the story of how she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis 20 years ago now. And it was really great to meet her at Sacred Edge.
Yeah, thanks, Rowan. There were so many just amazing people gathered at this festival, weren't there?
Mm.
And people so generous with their own lived experience, whatever shape that took, and so creative, actually, in the way they shared their lives with everyone else who was there. But that thing about personal storytelling really runs right through what's been happening here, I think, creating an opportunity for us to kind of sit with each other's stories, listen to one another, not, you know, in order to fix or help or change things for someone else, but to be present in a way that might help us discover our own humanity and in that way kind of build some kind of belonging or community. Storytelling in a more formal way was also part of the program, and one of the people I met was literally, and get this, a professional oral storyteller.
My name is M. Chandler, or Emma Chandler. My pronouns are she, they, and I am a professional storyteller, amongst many other things.
Sounds amazing.
It is.
It is. Yeah. It's the best job in the entire world.
Some would say we are storytelling creatures by virtue of our humanity, but to be a professional one, how did you get into that?
We are absolutely story creatures, but that's the only thing that humans a distinctly do versus versus every other species on the planet. Other species make art and dance and make music, and we're the ones who choose to tell stories. I fell in love with oral storytelling when I was in year 9, and I stumbled upon an English storyteller named Jan Blake, who's extraordinary, and she did this presentation at an international storytelling conference, and the video was online, and I watched her do it, and I went, that's amazing. I wish I could do that, but I couldn't possibly, even though I had been a performing artist most of my life. I started as a magician when I was 8 and had done school musicals and was still performing and continue to perform, but no, the storytelling, that was one step too far, and so it just sort of sat perpetually on the horizon. And I went to my honours degree, and then COVID happened, which was a really great time to do your honours degree, and only focusing on one thing, my honours thesis, I went slightly insane. And so finally it pushed me to join an oral storytelling group because they pivoted on to Zoom, and I thought, well, either I join and have something else to do and they hate me and I never go back, or I found something and I felt like, no, they were lovely and I loved it, and I've been storytelling ever since.
What a story, Em. We're here at the Sacred Edge Festival. Have you been here before, or what does it mean to you to be here? What's it about for you?
Yeah, this is my 4th year here, and I've known about it well before that 4th year. I've been involved in the Uniting Church since I was born, and have drifted in and out in various ways and means. I had lots of friends who were coming to Sacred Edge, and you really joined. I'm like, I don't know, I really don't know, no. But eventually, Kerry and Charles, who used to run Sacred Edge, finally got in contact and said, we really want you to come and do a story. And I went, well, okay, I guess I will. And so I did, and arrived late at night and heard people telling poetry and doing music and found this beautiful community. And then I did my story the next day and found, oh my goodness. And so I've been coming back every year, in fact, to the extent that I presumptively put in my calendar, hoping that they'll book me. And so far they have. But even if they don't, I'm going to come back every single year because I love the real sense of community that develops over these sort of 2.5 days.
Community is often elusive. Like, we all value it when we have it. Communities can be tricky, especially faith-based communities. I'm saying this to you. So what is it about, what kind of community do you find here?
I find a community that is more interested in questions than answers, which is not something that I always find. I mean, I still am, but during the period in which I drifted further away from the United Church, I got very involved in the Quakers, and I'm still involved in both. But I find, as much as I love lots of aspects of Quakerism, and there's lots of Quakers I love dearly, there is often a sense of we must know the right answer before we continue, which comes, of course, from the great tradition of discernment and consensus decision-making, which has, you know, stood the time of 500 years or more for Quakers, but does mean that, like, they want the answer. I'm like, actually, there often isn't an answer, particularly as a trans woman. It's like there isn't an answer I can give you that is going to satisfy. You just have to accept it. And I very much find that here. The people have lots of questions about all aspects of each other's lives and other people's lives and ourselves, but there's not a finding the correct answer that we can now go and take away. It is that there are always more questions and always more to discover, and that's part of the joy of being together and living, not that we've got the answer and now we can put it down and move on.
What have you learned about carrying the question, I guess, if I can put it that way?
Yeah. I mean, even as someone who, after much personal experience, knows that there are not always answers, it's still challenging to put aside the fact that there isn't an answer and you sort of have to cope with that. And actually, part of that is through when I do the gospel retellings here at Sacred Edge or elsewhere, is I have completely given up trying to plan it in advance. I mean, there is a level of writing and research that has to happen because, you know, you want to have something to go with. But there's no way I can go, yes, 4 weeks out, I'll know exactly what I'm telling. It's always a pretty much up until the moment is still a nebulous nature of it. And that's actually part of the process and part of the delight of getting to share stories like that, discovering what it is as it morphs and changes while we're experiencing it, rather than preempting or planning what it will be and then falling into it.
It sounds like, though, that would require you to be paying a lot of attention to what's happening and what is right at the moment in the room, among the audience, in yourself.
Yeah.
Perhaps in the texts that you could potentially choose from. So talk me through that part of your process.
The thing I have found, and didn't sort of necessarily know when I first started doing gospel retellings, but I've discovered, is I'm always trying to find the humanity in the characters. That often, especially the four canonical gospels, were all written with a very specific audience and purpose in mind, and while there are different purposes on audiences' mind, it's very much trying to convince the audiences that this is the Son of God and this is really important. And it is very important, but we tend to also forget that, yes, he's the Son of God who's also a man. It's not just the God stuff. And so the retelling is trying to find how might we understand this at a human level rather than just going, oh, yes, he was wonderful and he did a miracle and hooray. But, you know, what might that be like to be someone who experiences that miracle? What might it be like for him to do that miracle? Does he know that it's going on? Does he, like, that's a big, messy question. I'm only going to get to one tiny iota of it. But that's part of the joy of retelling, that we tell these stories over and over and over, and there's going to be infinite number of ways to retell it. And I often always find that what I'm trying to find is the humanity. And why do I tell this story? It was because, you know, despite everything, and it makes it sound negative, but it's not. Despite everything, he was human, people around him were human, and we are human, and it's us trying to muddle through and make sense of something much bigger together because we are human.
You sound really energized by that, Em.
Yeah. Yeah, I really am. It's been something that has percolated along for a very long time. I haven't always been comfortable as a person of faith, though I have never been quite able to shake it. But it's something that I've really found, particularly over the last 4 years through Sacred Edge and then little tiny projects that have spurred off that, is that, you know, it's the reason that I keep getting called back to tell these stories, that there is something greater and human that I don't think we're very good articulating through the stories that we tell each week, you know, through liturgy and through scripture, that we sort of put her on a pedestal, and there are reasons why we might choose to do that, but therefore there is a hesitancy to actually explore them in new ways because you're changing it. Well, yeah, well, there's four different versions of exactly the same story. We're not saying we're replacing that, but we can absolutely have something alongside that that helps us to understand it in our here and now, and might, in a sense, and there's a quote that I cannot remember from Adam Longle that is, you know, we don't tell the story to convert anyone. We tell the story because it's such an extraordinary story, we cannot help but tell it. And so hopefully by other people hearing it, they will not help but want to tell in it with us. I have completely butchered her beautiful language, but it's that same idea that it's like, it's the way that we can share in something so much bigger than ourselves and in turn understand ourselves in a much deeper way because of the endless questions and endless answers that do not match up.
So it sounds like the edge is a very roomy place, if I can put it that way.
It is a very movie place. Actually, when I was listening earlier this morning to Podrick, the thought came to me that, talking about centre and edges, the centre is defined by the edge. You cannot have a centre without an edge. You could actually arguably have an edge without a centre, but the centre is defined by the edge. And so I'm very, I mean, both as a neurodiverse trans woman, but I'm very comfortable in looking at the edges because that makes sense of something bigger. Jumping straight in, try and find that pinhole in the middle, is more agony than it's actually worth. We're going to find a much greater a kaleidoscope of what possibility might lie in the middle if we continually play around the edge.
You were saying that you don't choose what story you're going to tell ahead of time. So I'm not going to ask you what story you're going to share at this year's festival. But is there a text or a story or something like that that's on your mind that's kind of gripped you recently?
Oh, absolutely. One of my favourite Gospels is the Gospel of Thomas, the non-canonical Gospel of Thomas.
The Gnostic.
Then yes, exactly right. But often the fifth Gospel, because there's a lot of parallels in the text between the other Gospels. And it's a sayings Gospel, so it's all just Jesus said, blah, 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 Jesus said, blah, blah, blah. And the third is my favourite in the entire world. Jesus said, if the leaders say, look, the kingdom of heaven is in the air, the birds will precede you. And if they say, look, it is in the sea, then the fish will precede you. Rather, the kingdom is within you and outside of you. When you are known, you will know that you are the children of the living God. And when you are not known, you live in poverty, and you are that poverty.
Wow. When did you first read that?
I must have come across that in about 2019, I think, or so, when I was hedging back and forth between, is the Uniting Church for me, is Quakerism or not for me, and something spurred upon it, and I fell upon it and felt completely in love.
The Gospel of Thomas is not a common choice.
It's not a common choice, but I'm always fascinated, not that I know anywhere near level of depth of why, but, you know, why were the stories chosen that were chosen, and why were the stories that were not chosen not chosen? And we tend to, and this is true both absolutely for scripture, but also for folk tales, for any sort of story that is passed in any way orally, everyone comes in with a bias and with a purpose, and we tend to sometimes think, oh no, this is just how the story's always been told, or that's just the way it always has been. But everyone came in with a purpose, and that's not negative or positive, but it is there, and it's actually really healthy for us to go in our here and now, why might that be different? I mean, many people have much greater theological knowledge and skill. Can look and go, you know, this part of the gospel, Thomas, matches up with this other gospel. And so, you know, there's all this historical thing. But even if there wasn't, if it's saying something greater that resonates with us, why should we discard it just because four parents decided it wasn't right at that time and in that place? God is not just found within the pages of 66 books of the Protestant Bible. Anywhere, any text, a picture book, a poem, a blade of grass, it's all there. And so it's our duty to endlessly look and not always expect to find an easy answer, but to always be ready for the answer when it arrives.
M. Chandler, thank you.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
M. Chandler, a professional storyteller with a pretty serious side interest too in the non-canonical gospels, such as Thomas. M. is one of the many people that I've met at Sacred Edge Festival in Victoria. It's been great to be able to bring you here too with Soul Search on ABC Radio National and, of course, by podcast. You can listen for free anytime with ABC Listen. My name's Meredith Lake and I'm here at Sacred Edge with Soul Search producer Rowan Salmond. Hey, Rowan.
Hey, Meredith.
We've been talking a lot about storytelling, about lived experience in search of the sacred, those kind of things. But I guess the other thing that's really come out is that question of, like, where and how do we find spiritual community? A question that can be pretty sharp for people who might not feel so comfortable walking into, say, a regular church or another kind of traditionally religious space.
Yeah, and I met Kelly Woods, who's actually been doing a lot of work in exploring spirituality in the online space, actually.
So hang on, we're at a physical festival here. The whole point is that we're here in real life, you know, face to face. But on the side, people are meeting in digital spaces to kind of do the same thing. Was that the vibe?
Yeah, that's right. I was walking past a tent and they were live streaming at the time. And there was Kelly with bright green hair. And she told me about developing a digital faith community called the Sonderverse.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Kelly Woods, but if you know me from the online world, I'm Pastoral Hair. So, yeah.
What do you mean, Pastoral Hair?
So my handle online is Pastoral Hair. So if you type in Pastoral Hair across all socials, think Pastoral Care, but with an H instead of a C, like the rabbit, then you'll find me. So I'm on Instagram, Facebook, you can find me on TikTok even, and you'll find me chatting Pastoral Hair things on my online community, Sonderverse.
What does that mean? What is Sonderverse?
So Sonderverse is an online community that exists solely in the digital world, and we hang out to transcend time and place. So we game together and stream and we broadcast and chat all things spirituality and how that all ties together in an affirming and deconstruction-friendly community. So it's really cool.
So is that like a digital spiritual community, a Christian community, or is it broader than that?
Yeah, so I suppose if we were to go on the books, it's a Christian community, but we have the diversity of expressions in there. So those who would say, yes, call me Christian, that is good, through to this is the tradition that I've grown up in, but I'm kind of figuring out who am I in it and why do I exist and what do I even believe, through to we have people who come along who are raging atheists who actually just love to hang out with us. So we say, yes, welcome, let's chat. What's going on?
So what kind of things do you do online in the Sonderverse, and where does the Sonderverse sort of take place?
Yeah, so Sonderverse you can find if you go to sonderverse.org, but Twitch is where we usually hang out, and that's accompanied with a Discord community. So for those who don't know what that looks like, Twitch is a gaming platform like YouTube, but it's where people stream games or even people do crafting on there, and it's intentionally supposed to be watched together from different places. So it's very cool.
So do you game as well in Sonderverse, or what? Or is it sort of more theological, or does it all happen all at once?
Yes, yes, and yes. Okay. So we do all of the above. At the moment, we are jumping through a game called Split Fiction. I'm really excited about it, where half of the world's played in fantasy, the other half is played in sci-fi, and yet we have to pull each other into our worlds to actually accomplish things together. All the way through to doing Minecraft sessions, or we have BGA nights, which is Board Games Arena, and they are all of our board games that are online, on an online platform, and we just play together, game together, and then God rocks up there if we speak about God intentionally or not.
It's interesting you say that. I wonder what's the same and what's different with like a Sonderverse, I don't know whether you'd call it a service or a session compared to physically gathering like in a purpose-built building for the purpose of worship. Like, what can you compare those two things for me?
Yes, I can. I love this question. For us, the first challenge it really draws to us is as a community that's informed by Uniting Church theology. So we don't speak on behalf of it, but we are informed by it. We really take seriously what it means to acknowledge country and to be present. But country includes our airways and our skyways. And so it also includes our broadcasting. And so we begin acknowledging country every week. And people put in the chat group where they're broadcasting from. So it's very cool. Plus then we go through what we would call our liturgy, which is very similar to an in-person, in-building traditional worship, only because it has rhythm, not because it looks the same. So we have a segment called Have You Been Paying Attention, which we would get the scripture of the week to come, and we would look over the scripture and we just read it all together and go, what does it even mean? Like, why? Like, what stands out for you here? What's being said? And my favorite thing is that the chat remains open through this, and you have people jumping on being like, man, Jesus sounded a bit like an absolute asshole in that one. And we're like, tell us more. And so we unpack that world a bit. Plus, we then also spend some time going into maybe like, what did the Greek actually mean here? Or we might go, how are we living this out in our day-to-day? It might not even be about the context of the scripture, but actually how we are living it out in our daily lives. So we spend some time doing that. Then we go through to a thing called Dixit Divina or Deceit Divina, beautiful cards of artwork. And what we then do is hold them up and spend some time doing a Visio Divina session with it. What is this saying to you? Is it informing your prayers for the week? Are there things happening that you want to draw out from this image? Does it relate to the scripture that we've just heard? Or is this just speaking to you in your general life? So it kind of mimics that regular service in a different way, because then it's also partnered with our online community on Discord, and people can go back throughout the week and fill in and chat and put in their prayers or their concerns or their worries, or even just their like bewilderment at the scripture that's been shared. So it's very cool.
So and Discord is like a chat app that you can use. Yeah.
Yes.
And we're here at Sacred Edge Festival. What brings you to this gathered community?
Yeah, so what brings me here is I'm running a session called Moss and Me. So same way how our digital world, we might not see God being intentionally there. That's exactly the same everywhere we are. We might forget that God exists in the ordinary and sacred things exist everywhere. And I like exploring that with the world of moss. And so I love moss. Yeah.
Hold on, hold on. Let's go one step at a time. What is so appealing? Tell me more about moss. Why? We were just talking about, you know, gaming and computers and, and you know, quite artificial digital things.
Yes.
And I just, what? Why moss?
Moss holds the entire microbiome of the earth together. It has no root system. It doesn't fruit. When it can't survive, it then lays dormant until life can start again, and then it flourishes back out again. And it's very much akin to lichen or our fungi, like our mushrooms. They're deeply connected underground by networks of systems that move and shuffle together. And then what we see is just that expression of it here and now. And I love that about moss. And how it weirdly connects to the digital world is that that's what sonder means. So the word sonder is a word that's supposed to translate this acknowledgement that everybody has a life just as vivid and complex as your own. Mm-hmm. And you might only ever be a glimmer in a window as they drive by at night, or you might start playing a main character support role for them. But for us, the Sonderverse describes a community where nobody is an NPC. Nobody's a non-playing character. Everybody has a purpose in this world. And for me, Moss represents that in our nature because we forget about it. It grows in like the gaps of pathways to rocks, to trees, to the bases of mountains. And sometimes it's in our gutters. Like it's this most ludicrous thing, but yet it holds the entirety of the world together. And so even though they seem counter opposite to each other, I hold them both as deeply sacred things because God appears to me in both. And how do I pay attention to that and remain attentive to the sacredness of Moss and the digital world?
Yeah, and we've got some Moss crafts. Can we check that out?
Yes, we can. We can check out the Moss world. We're jumping over to a tent that is full of people. Hello.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
So at the moment we're doing our embroidery session with Moss. We have people doing needle felting through to embroidery, through to just tacking things on and gluing. We also have all these pieces are done with hand-dyed felt by a community in Warrenwood called Winterwood. So they have done the hand-dyed felt. And then we've also got some polymer clay mushrooms that I've just whipped up so we can attach it to create ecosystems, or I like to call them wall terrariums. They're things that can just stay on our wall that look like moss and feel like moss. And we've said they smell like moss even, but it's faux moss. It's not actually real. It's just supposed to, I suppose, intrigue us a bit to come and play.
So lots of, like, every shade of green. Can we go and have a look at some of the examples?
Sure. Ta-da!
Yeah, so tell me, so we've got these discs here that have embroidery on them.
Yes, so we got our discs that are in an embroidery hoop, and then some of them in that hoop have our felt, and then tacked into that felt is material that represents moss, plus our needle felting that goes in there. And then on top of that, we've got our embroidery, and each of them move and form how moss might be. It kind of mimics it, but then takes from it as well. And this is just one thing that's happening at the Sacred Edge Festival, but there are many different things exploring sacred things at the edges. And at the edges here happens to be moss, and my life happens to explore the edges in the digital world. But we have labyrinth walking through to poetry, even eating our meals are deeply sacred. And that is all here, and we're just excited to be a part of it this year.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Kelly Woods, and her online faith community is called Sonderverse. She's also known as Pastoral Hare, that's H-A-R-E, in online spaces.
Yeah, thanks, Rowan. So many interesting things in what Kelly had to say. And look, like you, I was not expecting moss.
Yes. <no. laughs>
That said, maybe I should have, because as we heard from Greg Crow, the organiser of this festival, Sacred Edge, there is a kind of ecological strand running through so many of the conversations that we've been hearing over the course of the day. I've really enjoyed, apart from all the people that we interviewed, all the people we spoke to off the tape as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Including, lots of people who always listen to Soul Search. It's always a huge pleasure to meet listeners in a face-to-face way. So special shout out if that was you. Thank you so much for saying hello. It was a real delight to meet you and to be part of the whole thing. We're out of time for now, but we're not quite leaving yet, Rowan, because next time on Soul Search, another conversation from Sacred Edge, a very special conversation with the Irish poet Padraig O'Tuama, which some people might know him from previous conversations here on Soul Search. He's also the host of Poetry Unbound, which is probably the most popular poetry podcast anywhere in the world.
He's worked in conflict transformation, he's a theologian and, of course, a poet in his own right, and his latest book is called Kitchen Hymns, which, of course, stirred my interest, and I had the huge delight to speak with Padraig about that over the course of an hour at Sacred Edge Festival, and next time on Soul Search, everyone will be able to hear it.
You won't want to miss that. That's on Soul Search on Radio National, Radio Australia, and by podcast on ABC Listen.
And look, thanks so much, Rowan, for all the work you've done in pulling this episode together. And thanks as well to Hong Jiang, our co-producer. So see you later, Rowan.
Bye, Meredith.
I'm Meredith Lake, and I'll catch you for Soul Search again.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.